So we're live.
We're live. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Nerdy Up North podcast. It's a nerdy podcast hosted by Northern Nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam.
And I am the other host, Paul. And do not adjust your sets. Yes, we are in black and white today. We are very classical, demure, and yeah, I think it suits us. I think we do well.
I like it. Makes me. I wish I didn't. I mean, I wish I knew so I didn't have to put any makeup on. That'd been cool, but. Hey, we're here. It's Sunday night.
And it's the first one of 2025. How Woo-hoo. Fucking old are we now?
Because then it reminds us how old I am in 2025, and we don't need to go there yet. It's not happening yet.
Are you still in denial? Denial is
I've been in denial since I was 21.
Bless you. It's not just a river in Egypt, don't worry. So yes, so how's your New Year resolutions going so far, Sammy?
Mine? Mm-hmm. Actually, not so bad. So I started the TikTok trend. I think it's a class of the TikTok trend because I've only ever seen it on TikTok. The 75 medium.
Right.
So it's basically setting out intentions for the next 75 days, which will take us up to like 16th of September. Mm-hmm. And it's making sure that you do these intentions every day. Mm-hmm. And I included all my podcast and work around it. Mm-hmm. And what 5 days in? I haven't broke it yet.
All right. So Sammy hasn't broke something. So again, we're rocking the world, staying true to what we say. But yes, I don't know if I set myself any resolutions. I don't know. Just
to have more fun.
To not kill Chris, probably that's always a good one, I think.
I think that's just a normal day to day mantra that you have to read out to yourself. Don't kill Chris. Don't kill Chris.
It's like the film we're going to be talking about today, doing a different mantra. I am a girl. I am a girl. But yes. So yeah, new year, new us, new Nerdy Up North.
New era.
New ownership. Not ownership. New person in charge, shall we say?
The funny thing is, though, I've been in charge since day one, really. So I'm only joking.
Certainly. So Sammy's had a promotion, shall we say. A promotion, that sounds so twatish. So, like I say,
I found the funny side of it.
Yeah, I'm taking a bit of a back seat. And we now have Sammy that is in charge of YouTube Nerdy Up North. So all the videos, all the streams, all the people who come to me with ideas now have to go to Sammy. This bitch is the one that you have to mess with now.
This one right here. Yes. Fun times. Fun times ahead. Be prepared to hear the word no a lot.
Title of your sex tape. So yes. So do you want to do the first disclaimer of 2025?
I most certainly do. Mm-hmm. So, everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us in the Facebook group. You can join us in the Nerdy Up North Discord, or you can hit us up in the comments section where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong, because we can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behaviour out of nerdism.
Very well said there. So starting off as we mean go on, I know we talked about this before, like say the end of the year. This is going to be kind of like the new format where we start every month with a movie, a classical movie, something from, like, say, old school Hollywood, or even our technical classic, like even new school Hollywood, but it has to what we would class as a movie classic.
Like, kind of fits in with the movie thing, because we are going for the old Hollywood classics and we're going to hit out some big hitters to start with. It's only going to be once a month. It's the new era of Nerdy Up North. The classy, the demure.
Yes, the sophisticated.
The sophisticated.
Yes, we're trying to be all good, but yes.
we're just trying to do something, to be honest, we're really just doing something that accompanies like all everything that we love.
Yes.
Literally everything.
Because not many, well, if you watch the podcast, you'll know me and Sammy probably use the word cinemaphile, where we don't just love modern movies or specific type of movies. We love pretty much all types of movies. And we've not really delved into some of our passions of classicals, like Some Like It Hot, Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Marx Brothers, Laurel and Hardy. Like all these different things that we can basically discuss. It might not be popular with the youth of today. Go, no, I don't want to watch a black and white movie. But we're going to tell you why you should give these movies a chance if you haven't. That's probably such the best way.
No, that is such a good way of describing it. Because these movies are timeless for a reason. And that's what we want to discuss and talk about. And I feel like The Wizard of Oz episode we did last year, God, it's crazy to say that we did that last year, is kind of given us a bit of a stepping stone into that, of what the possibilities are that we could do with these old classic Hollywood movies. And I'm so happy that we get to start with what we're starting with today.
Yes, and if I describe this, again, people always probably say, oh, Paul, blowing smoke up someone's arse or over-exaggerating. This is, after even watching it again today, I would say up there, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Ever. And
we will talk about the reasons why. Like, I'll back up that statement with a lot of different facts. Well, not facts, like opinions and what you see when, or what you get from this movie. It is timeless. It is beautifully filmed. Like, the set pieces, the shots, the camera work, the action, like if you want stunts and like crazily how they did this and nobody got killed at times, it is amazing. And for an acting clinic, you will not get a better acted movie than this movie right here.
Couldn't agree with you more. And guess what I have? To keep in line with past episodes, I have the taglines for this movie.
Great.
Now, what you've got to take into account is the taglines for classic movies are coming from the likes of posters and newspaper articles. So you'll have to bear with us on some of the ones that are on here. Are you ready? Not since Scarface, so much action. Not since the Marx Brothers, so much comedy. Not since the 7-year itch, so much Marilyn.
And we'll get into the dresses she wears in this movie. Oh, wow. Oh. How is this a PG? I do not know.
No idea. So you're right. This is my favorite one. The most comedy ever made. The biggest comedy ever made. And the hottest comedy ever made.
Some Like It Hot.
And the movie too hot for words.
Wow.
And the last one is kind of a bit of a slap in the face to the two main leads in this, but Marilyn Monroe with her bosom campaign, I can't even say it. Marilyn Monroe and her bosom companions, Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon.
Right. So I wouldn't have said them or her, like, two assets, shall we say. But certainly. Now, I remember watching this as a kid, because like my dad loved the old black and whites, or so I used to get made to, well, like, got shown them. This was the type of movie I would watch with like White Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life. Like, it used to be like, I would say, a seasonal or Christmas or bank holiday kind of fodder that we used to watch Some Like It Hot. Like, fair enough, a lot of the jokes went over my head because I was too young to get.
Yeah.
But not just the jokes, but the action scenes and the mob scenes as well. Because This film was made in 1959.
Was.
So mob films and gangsters and speakeasies were the rage for these type of movies back then. And the opening of this movie, the way they filmed it with a car chase with the police and, like, say, the bootlegging, the bottles of whiskey and the coffins and stuff.
Yeah.
The stunts they pulled this is crazy. Because I was watching it going, how the fuck? You've got cars, I don't know how fast they were driving, because it was all the old rickety ones with very much support, going down a street in America or on the lot, because it would have been filmed on MGM lot.
Yeah.
Going, like, skidding with police, people hanging on the side, not even in the cars, and going to a stop, then running off and chasing after the bad guys with guns. Like, the stunt work in this was unbelievable, especially for the time. And, like, I know now they would never do it that way because health and safety be damned.
Health and safety be damned. Absolutely not. yeah, you're absolutely right. If we can just give people a bit of a synopsis, just a brief synopsis of the film, just to, if nobody's seen it. This is about two musicians who managed to stumble in on a mob execution, very St. Valentine's Day Massacre style, if not the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And they end up going on the run. Subsequently, they're able to find a job where they can get away from it. But the you can look at it as a downfall, or the upside is they have to dress up as women in order to do this. And then the adventure starts.
And exactly what you've said there, and if you're thinking of from a 1959 film movie perspective, think of the tones of the time, think of people's beliefs at the time. They could have went really hard and nasty with the type of jokes they could have done. And they were nothing but respectful and very much... If you made this movie now, you would get no complaints on how they handled that situation.
There was one moment where I thought, shit, this is where it's going to turn a bit dark for now, like for the time. It was when Tony Curtis gets the phone call and he's on the phone and he finds out that there have to be women and he just goes, no, no.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. Like, where's that going to go? How is that going to turn? And it doesn't go the way that you think it's going to.
No.
It's just he didn't want to be dressed up as a woman, which is fair play to him.
Yeah, because let's say it's not for everyone. Some people might feel free. Some people might feel uncomfortable. And again, that's their prerogative. That's their, it's where their comfort zones are. But they could have done this so cheaply. They could have done so many cheap gags based on, that type of humour that would have probably been around at the time. And not once. This is how good this film is and how clever the comedy was. There's not one cheap joke or cheap gag based on basically the fact that these two are dressed up as women. They fully embrace it. They have the time of their life. Jack Lemmon is one of the funniest things. Like, you can tell how comfortable he starts growing in the role by the end. And it's just something... But again, just to talk about the three main leads, Marilyn Monroe is absolutely stunning, phenomenal, breathtaking in this. Tony Curtis, Sammy said it before, so I'm not going to steal the line. you can see it.
But Tony Curtis, he had the hardest job on this film because essentially he plays three characters. His initial character, his woman character, and his millionaire character. So he had the hardest job of them all. But what I said earlier, and I stand by this fully and heartily, that Jack Lemmon is effortlessly funny in this.
Yes.
Like, he does it just, it's so easy for him. It was such a pleasure to watch him and just, he wasn't trying to steal a scene, even though when he's standing in a scene with Marilyn Monroe, you're not looking at Marilyn initially, you're looking at him.
No.
But he's not intentionally doing it. He works with people.
Yeah.
And he did the same with Tony Curtis as well. He's just... what I learned today about Jack Lemmon is that he is very much an actor's actor. So he went on and did television initially. And I think he was in 400 episodes of something. He'd just done so much telly to when he realized, if I'm going to be taken seriously, And a lot of actors of his time did this. They went to stage. So they established a little bit of a name for themselves and then kind of took themselves out of it. They were comfortable enough to take themselves out of it and go onto the stage, which is what Jack Lemmon did. Like Jack Lemmon does Macbeth, he does Hamlet. You don't think of this funny man that you're watching on this film has the capability of doing that, but Jack Lemmon certainly does. And then he comes back and does movies. So for me, he's kind of one of those
He's a,
actors.
I think the talent on screen is just breathtaking. Like Tony Curtis, like say, like a lot of people make jokes that he give us, like say, like Jamie Lee Curtis as well. So like say, that's an acting dynasty just there. But his performance in this, as you said, he's got the three roles, and he plays them all perfectly. He's like, from the moment he comes on screen, he's smarmy. He's slick. He's one of those creeps that kind of makes you, like, the hairs on your hand stand up. But he's got the charm that you can't help but actually, he's got that likability, and that get, like you said, in that time, it gets him through so much, because we find out he's got a gambling habit. He's a womanizer. He's everything that, like, say, as
Everything
we
Tony
from
Curtis
Curtis
was.
was basically. So he wasn't really acting too much there, but the switch when he was playing, like say, the female character Josephine, he changes his walk, he changes his mannerisms, his voice. Everything is done so well. And then, as you said, you get Jack Lemmon, who's just, again, I know, like, not to do anyone down, he is the standout performance in this movie. You literally, he's got that charisma that basically people would die for. Like, he could be funny and just by having a conversation. And he's like the heart and soul of the movie as well. And then, as soon as Sugarcane Marilyn Monroe walks on the screen, and you hear the noise, wah, 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 wah. And she just, you cannot take your eyes off it. I don't think, I know she's done a lot of different things, and like people always go 7 year age. She never looked as beautiful as any other movie than she did in this movie.
I think now's a perfect time to talk about Marilyn in this movie, because and I don't and I am not you've got to know me in order to know what I'm saying is not coming from a place of hate or anything like that. I am Marilyn's number one fan, if not her biggest fan. Like, I love her. It is beyond fandom when it comes to Marilyn for me. But she was a fucking nightmare on this film. What I was trying to explain earlier to Paul was that she's not that great of an actress. She's a starlet. She's a beauty. But when Marilyn gets it, she really gets it. But she it takes a lot of work to get to that point. So in this movie, she had a really comfortable relationship with Billy Wilder. Like, Billy Wilder had already done 7 Year Itch with her. He knew what to expect. But because of that comfort level, it was very much taken advantage of by Marilyn. Marilyn had a vocal coach called Paula Strasberg, who would literally, I got the name wrong when I was telling you about them earlier. She would literally blow smoke up Marilyn's ass every 2 minutes that she possibly could. And she would give her techniques in order to get her into the character. And it would completely, she would get nervous. She'd get nervous, she'd get anxious, and the whole thing would just go to pot. To the point where if you really are paying very close attention to Marilyn's performance in this, you can see her eyes constantly going backwards and forwards, because her lines are wrote everywhere you can't see on this behind her. There's a where the scene with the where she says, "I'm sugar, sugar cane." That's written in the drawer she pulls the alcohol out of. That's how bad it was. And Billy would always, he was so gentle with her. He had some very choice words for her after the movie was finished. But he was so kind to her on set to make her, because he knew it was the nerves and anxiousness, and he knew it was Paula Strasberg who was getting into her head to get her into the place where she was. So he would just say, We're going to cut and press when you do it well, but the boys have got to make sure they are on their A game as well. It will be their fault, not yours, if they get it wrong.
Right.
And he wants, so Paula Strasberg was in so much of a pain. Marilyn would be performing to her as opposed to the camera or whoever else she was. She would be literally looking at her. And in the end, when Billy Wilder said cut, he turned to Paula and went, was that good enough for you?
Right.
And after that moment, Paula Strasberg kind of took a bit of a step back and the whole thing started to change. But what you've also got to remember in this movie, Marilyn's pregnant.
You could tell because they used lighting very differently. Like the lighting was more focused on her face and other areas, shall we say.
And yeah, Marilyn's pregnant in this movie. And Marilyn was pregnant before this movie and lost her child.
Right.
And then she fell pregnant in this one. And there's another level of anxiety and another level of fear that she goes through. So she doesn't have the greatest time, but she didn't. She really, she alienated herself from the cast eventually. Like Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon couldn't get near her at half the time. It just got really uncomfortable to the point where when the wrapped up and they had the wrap party, she wasn't invited.
Right. It's a shame though, because
he took it really hard.
Yeah, because when you watch the film back, there's no
animosity.
No, you just think they must have had the best time just because the way they were going on, like Jack Lemmon's timing in this movie, like the way he has conversations and he does like little things as well. Like the scene on the train, like there's a few things on the train. The train is probably one of my highlights, I'll be honest with you. Like from when they get on the train and like, you initially meet Josephine and, it wasn't Geraldine, they changed the name. What was it? Dottie. Was it Dottie?
No, Geraldine and Josephine.
No, because
it was Jerry.
Because I know.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because he says he doesn't like being called, he didn't want to be called Geraldine.
I've just watched it.
I know.
I can't remember. We've done so much today. Yeah. I cannot remember.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's Dottie, but I might be wrong. Again, if I'm wrong, I apologize. But basically, them two go on the train, and they're introduced like to all the girls, and Jack Lemmon's just going, "Oh man, like I'm in heaven, like watching all these beautiful women in the 1950s negligees, which is basically like honestly stunning," and he's just sitting there smiling from ear to ear like a Cheshire cat. And then Tony Curtis is keeping reminding him, saying, "You're a girl." And he's going, "I'm a girl. I'm a girl. I'm a girl.
I'm a girl." I love the turnaround later on where he's like, "I'm a man. I'm a man. I'm a man." You've got to keep reminding yourself that. This movie is not an original plot.
Right. Okay.
It was written by Billy Wilder and his writing partner, I.A.L. Diamond. And it actually comes from a screenplay of a French film called Fanfare of Love.
Right.
Exactly the same story, just completely taken, flipped on its head, turned American, and the rest is history.
All right.
But you were right, though, the gangster subplot is because of the time.
Yeah, 100%.
That was very much of because of the time. And when the movie was released, it was shown in a handful of cinemas as a preview.
Right.
People walked out.
All right.
Didn't like it. Didn't find the funny side of it.
It was quite violent at the start, especially when the mobster scenes...
And there is no dialogue for the first 7 minutes.
Right. Okay.
It's very, no dialogue whatsoever. It's just all action. So, which is unusual for a movie of that time as well.
Right.
You would have some formal introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Not for this one. But Jack Lemmon actually went to one of these previews where people were walking out. And Billy Wilder just pulled him to one side and went, "This is the funniest shit we've ever done. Don't doubt yourself.
Yeah,
I'm not cutting it. I'm not changing it. This will go out and this will be a hit."
Yeah.
God bless Billy Wilder. Because Jack Lemmon was willing to scrap the thing and start again.
Right.
And he said no. He went, "Trust in what you've done, because it's the funniest shit we've ever done."
It's, again, it's very ahead of its time for a lot of different aspects and a lot of different like tones. As you said, that action scene now wouldn't be, people wouldn't blink now. People will just go, just that was like, all right, we're getting into the movie, we're getting a feel for the movie. I know back in the day, people like to be hand fed a bit, and like saying, this is what the story's going to be. This is, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys.
Yeah.
Where you weren't really introduced to the characters in that way. And again, the two main characters, like Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis's characters, aren't squeaky clean. They're not like wholesome, they're not the perfect heroes type thing. And again, the story isn't like a proper natural happy love story either, because basically
it's complicated as fuck.
Because Tony Curtis is basically tricking Marilyn Monroe's character to kind of like this fake millionaire, because to be fair, Marilyn Monroe's beautiful, but she's been a bit of a gold digger as well. She just wants a millionaire so she can have an easy life. She's not really bothered, but she wants someone to be kind. She's sick of having shit. She's sick of having dealings saxophone players, who unfortunately that's what Tony Curtis is, and he plays up to that role perfectly. It's only near the end when he flips the script and he actually does fall for her in a way, and he kind of comes out, to be honest, because she could,
at that point he's just been himself. He's been the player that he's always been until then.
No, it's perfect. That's like, say, the analogy as well. So again, it's not a straightforward, old-fashioned love tale where everything's nicely put in a box or nicely put into the things. Even, like, say, the end joke, like, say, sorry to skip to the spoilers as well, is basically Jack Lemmon trying to explain to, like, say, this old millionaire who's fallen in love with him why he can't marry him. He's like, I can't marry him because I'll not fit in your mom's dress. And he's like... we'll get it fitted. He's like, I can't marry her because I smoke. And he's like, no, he's like, I can't marry her because I've lived with a saxophone player for the last 2 years. And he's like, it's okay, I forgive you. And he just
Marry you because I can't have children. That's okay, we'll adopt.
Yep. And then he takes the wig off and says, I'm a man. And the guy just doesn't even blink and just goes, well, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect.
So it just shows you that he didn't just fall in love with the woman, he fell in love with the person.
Fell in love with him.
Which is great. Like, to have the balls to do that. I know it's a joke, but there's a lot of underlining message in that as well.
Oh, massively. And you don't think that he knows what he's looking at after he's taken the wig off, because Osgood's staring straight forward. But as the end comes up in the middle, Osgood looks at him and smiles.
Yeah.
So he knows exactly who's in front of him. That line is ad-libbed. That is crazy that the most famous line in this movie, and actually was in the top 48 famous lines of movies, like it was number 48, was ad-libbed. It wasn't even written in the script.
But the way it finishes that way, I know it sounds cheesy as fuck to say this, but it just fills you with so much joy that there's that acceptance and stuff like that. You wouldn't even get that fucking acceptance now. Nah. And they had the balls to put that in. And I know they probably didn't mean it to come across that way, but to me, that transcends anything that happens like before or after. It's just a great story, a great weird end of movie. The perfect ending.
It was literally the perfect ending. If we can go to Tony Curtis and his eccentric billionaire voice and character. Tony Curtis wanted to do an impression of Cary Grant.
Right, okay.
As if you've heard Cary Grant, he does not sound like Cary Grant. But that was his interpretation of Cary Grant. And Bill Wilder absolutely loved it and said, fine. Cary Grant saw the parody of himself and went, I don't sound like that.
To be fair though, Cary Grant is renowned for not having a sense of humour though. So.
But if you've ever heard Cary Grant, he has an accent that, because Cary Grant is from Bristol. He's Bristolian, and his accent is nothing like how he spoke. There's a very good docuseries of Cary Grant played by the guy who played Lucius Malfoy. Isaac Hayes,
that's different.
No, good God, that's a very different person. Very different movie, and he's dead. Isaac, I can't think of what his name is, but it's the guy who played Lucius Malfoy in Harry Potter series. He plays Cary Grant, and it is absolutely phenomenal. If you love that era of Hollywood, you are going to absolutely love that. But Yeah, he wanted to do an impression of Cary Grant. it's a choice. It is
Yes.
a choice, but it's not my favorite character of Tony's that he plays.
No, okay, cool.
Josephine, still
Josephine.
Josephine. Yeah. Josephine comes across quite aggressive. To Tony Curtis's quite playful and loving Geraldine. The scene with Jack Lemmon with all the ladies in the bunk, and you just see that is amazing.
But the way they go on as well, this is like when they're having a party. Like, let's be honest, like we've all been to parties. If we go to basically like say Lee's house or Chris's house, it's a bit more sophisticated at Jake's. But other but the party they have in this bunk bed, like they're getting vermouth, they're getting like all the different fancy loads. They're going around looking for maraschino cherries. It's like, wait there.
And Jack Lemmon's getting all sorts pushed into his face that he doesn't quite understand what's going on. Like, he doesn't realize what a girl party actually is until he's in the middle of it, and he is loving it.
Until they start tickling him and he starts realizing that things are not going to go the way they want us to.
Yeah,
So he does
and that's
the
when
only thing.
Josephine comes in.
And they pull the emergency brake, which is the one of the like again. I wonder how they did this gag, because to do this safely, I don't think I know it's only a small fall, but there's probably about 16 women falling out of a bunk bed on the floor, and how no one got hurt during the film of that scene. I don't know if they think it was crazy.
All them ladies are absolutely beautiful. The one in particular who really caught my eye was the one who got in the bunk bed and said good night. And that's when Jack Lemmon responds and he's like, "Oh my God, look at all these women." And she is absolutely breathtaking. But what they did, because Jack Lemmon wasn't convinced that people weren't going to be dumb enough to realize that they were men dressed as women. So they wanted to test the theory. So Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, put on their makeup, put on their heels, and they went to the Goldwyn Studios when it was before it was the MGM, and they went into the ladies' toilets
Right.
and they stayed there. And the ladies came in. The ladies from the
So,
train came in and nobody batted an eyelid. They even passed the lipstick over.
right. So,
They got
that's
away
not
with
creepy.
it.
That is a bit creepy, though. It's like
But they
I'm gonna
wanted
sit
to
in,
they
they could have done d in different places,
No, they
but
just
not.
literally just stood in the front mirror of the ladies' toilet and just waited there and wait and the all these because all the women were coming out of the rehearsals all came and you saw how many of them that were on that train come booling in and they just started passing stuff around to get ready and Josephine and Geraldine got mixed in with a bunch,
Now
so they
we
managed to convince people.
true, but we had a discussion before we went live. I thought Jack Lemmon pulled off the woman really well and looked beautiful. I had questions about Tony Curtis. You thought Tony Curtis looked okay.
Yeah, I did. I thought there was certain angles of the face. I was like, "Oh, I get it. Yeah, I understand." You don't. What I liked is that he didn't look like Jamie in a wig. That's what I, 'cause that's like a thought that can go in your head. So I was quite pleased that I didn't see that. But some silhouettes and some of the profile shots of him, he looks good as a lady.
Do you think the it was Daphne? It was Daphne, not Doris. Daphne, there was Jackman's
Daphne,
Daphne,
yes.
sorry. I've just been bugging us, that's why. So do you think in the Curtis household that Josephine ever came back out in future parties and stuff? Because he
No.
was very comfortable in that role.
They were both very comfortable in that role. Someone said if you knew Jack Lemmon's mother, you knew Jack Lemmon's character.
Right, okay.
They did it down, he did it to the hair. From the hair, the mannerisms, the way that she walked, the way that she dressed. He did his mother. He impersonated his mother. Tony Curtis, I'm not too sure. I think just Tony just threw something on and went, "That'll do." But Tony and Tony's household, Jamie Lee doesn't has come out quite a lot, not so great words about her father. She doesn't speak ill of him because he is dead, but she recognizes that her household was very difficult.
Yeah.
But Tony fought for that house. So Tony was under contract and he met Janet Leigh, and the studios tried their hardest to keep them two apart. Like literally putting barrier upon barrier in front of them, and Tony knocked every single one of them down for her. And they ended up being married for some time. They had two kids together. I'm not saying everything was all hunky-dory, but fuck me, he fought a studio. And at the time, that's huge.
Yeah, but
you don't fight the studio.
Tony Curtis had the name to do that, though. That's the thing. Like,
yeah.
If there was one person that could.
He could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, I thought that story was so fascinating. I've read quite a bit about these two because I know so much on Marilyn. I was like, I'm going to have a look at these two. And like, Jack Lemmon, like, is just an enigma to me now because of what I've learned. Like, you don't realize how much he's been in and what I've, like, I've never seen him in, like, half the stuff he's done. Did you know he got, he actually got the part for, oh, God, Richard Burton ended up playing him. Oh, I read this earlier. What was the film? What was the film with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton?
Oh.
It's not Cleopatra.
Don't know. Pass.
Oh, God, that is going to absolutely bother us.
Right.
Can't think of what it is. But yeah, he gets offered all these massive roles, and Tony's so, like, not Tony, Jack is so particular on what he does. What the hell was Richard Burton in?
But not sure. Like I say,
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Right, okay.
Whatever he does. Yeah, he got the part for it. And then the following day went, nah, I don't want it, it's all right. Just I'll not have it.
But the thing is, though, it's one of those, I think at the time in Hollywood, that was quite unusual, because if you were signed to a studio, you were doing so many films per year, per day. Sometimes some actors worked on two films a day, like per day type thing. They used to go on one set to the other, just to, like, say, to keep going, because it was just like the machine, as it described back in the day type thing.
Yeah, and some of them really wanted to get out their contracts quicker, so they would do a lot of movies quicker. Contract work was, it sounded great because you were tied to a studio, and that studio essentially would have your back. That's what you initially thought until you were there, and they don't.
No,
you
don't really see that much these days.
No, so, no. You do in some places, but it's not as prevalent as what it was then.
I think it's more directors than actors now.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like a director's attached to a studio rather than, like, say, a certain actor.
Yeah, the only way I can think of it is when actors don't have to audition. Maybe because of some form of contract. I don't know. I know more about the contractual side of old Hollywood than I do of what it is right now.
I think the only person I can think of in today's climate that has a similar kind of deal is Chris Nolan with Warner Brothers.
You're probably right. So, like, yeah, you contracted to do X amount of movies for us.
To look about. Or Adam Sandler with Netflix. Similar type
of
deal.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Because then you've got, my mind has just gone completely blank today. What's his name? He done Midnight Mass and...
Okay, it's Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan, that's right. He had a Netflix deal. Now he's got an Amazon deal. So that is probably around the same kind of feel.
That was back then. Now, one thing I do want to touch on, because, again, I'm not going to try and ignore the fact... The two dresses that they put Marilyn Monroe in this film, they weren't dresses. They were negligees, shall we say. I don't know how they got away with this in the time. I know they probably got away with certain aspects with lighting, but everything was on show.
More to do with the fact it's shot in black and white. So there's a few reasons why it's shot in black and white. However, Marilyn, in her contract... had a clause that all movies had to be shot in colour. And Billy Wilder had to convince her with footage of the movie in colour to show her why they couldn't do that, because Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis looked green.
It's okay.
The the makeup that, and I understand that because I know makeup a lot better now, but and I understand what they probably would have used. There is a green concealer that you can use to your face that will kind of make you a bit more paler. It's kind of give you a bit more of a grayish look. So it would have really helped with the skin tone of them two to, you know, around the cheek area, around the beard area. So, but on camera, it just shows up, and it does in certain lights. If you don't blend it to the, you know, to the depths, it will show up as green. So we had to convince them and her that this needs to be shot in black and white. And that probably helped out with the dress, especially the dress where she sings, "I want to be loved by you."
Wow.
Because, yeah. Yeah. That is sheer. That is almost kind of like the same material look as the Mr. President's dress, but actually more revealing.
I think the
It
one
looked
had
like she didn't have nout on the top.
no, I think there was sparkles over where the nipples would have been,
Sparkles,
where they had like dim rhinestones,
sparkles.
diamantes. Oh yeah,
Sparkles, I love that though. She had sparkles.
she was definitely
Titty
sparkling. She was
sparklers.
definitely titty sparkling there. But I think there was, like I said, that was the only thing that was covering up the nipples. Then the other dress, I know that the other dress where it was translucent, where the way she runs towards the ship at the end, because that's the one where you get the kiss like I said, not as well
As Joe.
as Josephine, where he's dressed as Josephine, kisses her, and everyone's like in shock, and it's like Beanstalk, because like I said, women kissing women's no in in them days. Never mind a man dressed as a woman,
No.
but. You see her in that dress and she's running along the dock, and I'm like, oh shit, she's falling out everywhere. But you don't just see a front when she turns around the back, you see everything on the back because the back is completely see-through as well.
Yeah.
I was like, fucking hell.
What I love though is the initial dress, which you can see on the promotional picture in here in this shot. And if you are listening on audio, it is the dress that she's wearing when she first sings Running Wild. You see every curve, every bump, every like
She is a
Marilyn was
lady. She is a
she
beautiful
oh,
lady.
she yeah, Marilyn wasn't your typical figure of a Hollywood starlet. She wasn't straight up and down. She had curves, she had bumps, she was very like, but she was so comfortable in her old skin that it works. And that whole scene, she's like all over the place. What I was watching the making of before we came on, and that scene with the Running Wild, she actually has a choreographer in front of her who she's mimicking. And the choreographer's getting a bit carried away. So when she's like shimmying and shaking, or do you know when she kind of stops? And then she starts shimmying. It's because he's just in a world of his own and just going off one, doing all these shimmies and shakes, and she's trying to keep up with him. So she's kind of like mimicking what he's doing.
So what you're saying is we should get Chris to try and mimic this dance and
Oh,
try and perform
absolutely. With
it.
that dress on as well. This isn't, to be honest, apart from the black satin dress that she wears, I'm not a huge fan of Marilyn's wardrobe throughout this. I'm not too keen on the dress from when she's singing in the cabaret. But I'm really spoiled when it comes to Marilyn Monroe's outfits. When you look at The 7 Year Itch or How to Marry a Millionaire and There's No Business Like Show Business, there's so much more better than here. Which is a shame, but that's just personal opinion.
No, down to personal choice. Like, I had no complaints about, well, for obvious reasons, for what she was wearing. But like everything from, like, not just Marilyn's dresses, but all the outfits that everyone wear, from even like the gangster spats, like them old shoes, and like say, how they ran the speakeasy by, instead of saying it was whiskey, they said it was coffee.
Coffee. I love that scene. Can I have another cup of coffee? Right. Can you answer me this? Because I asked Ant the same question and he was like, I'm thinking it's part of the shoe design. So do you know the shoes? Like, I always pictured gangster shoes when I was a kid, and when I used to draw them was the black shoe with the white on the top, and it was the shoe. These look like covers
No,
on the top.
the spats were the covers. There were shoe
That's what
covers.
the is that what they're called though?
I mean,
I could have Googled this, but I couldn't be bothered.
I'm not sure. Because I know the spats was a type of shoe, but he wore the shoe covers because when he got that mobster to check his hand, they were clean.
And he says, "Can you clean my spats? Can't you?"
Tie up my spats. So So that was the thing. So I think it was kind of like a shoe cover, but like what I loved about this, every single mobster kind of cliche is used perfectly. Yeah. You've got Toothpick Charlie who's sitting there with a toothpick in his mouth. Even when he's gunned down by a minigun, he's still got his toothpick in his mouth. That Spats walks over and kicks it out of his mouth.
Yeah, but someone later on goes, yeah, and they got that toothpick and they golden plated it. It looks really good. Some of the funniest scenes are with these mob bosses' mind. Yeah.
You've got this Dime Star Hood who's standing on the corner of the thing going, "Hey, C," flicking a coin up in the air and catching it. I was like, that is so typical 40s gangster. You could not have been more stereotypical if you tried.
And it was so annoying as well because he just kept doing it over and over again. But it's the guy, I think it's the policeman who goes, "Hey, Spats,
he replies saying, "Hi, copper."
Hey, I know, and that, I could not stop laughing. And saying, like, "What's got you tickled?" And I was like, "The copper part," but it's the "Hey, Spats, I see you're here," and he's like, "Hey, copper," and I was like, "Oh my god!"
But then you get the mobster trying to hide his Tommy gun in a golf caddy.
It's not loaded. The one hides it in the trousers, and he's going, "It's not loaded," and then his other leg has all the bullets.
It's like proper cliche. One thing, again, this is very much of the time, but probably not of the time as well, because this thing still happened. It showcases how women are treated by the opposite sex.
From
the bellboy, from the rich guy filling them up, till the mobsters going, "Oh, I'm going to basically come to your room and stuff like that." And even the bellboy saying, "Don't worry about leaving your door open, I've got the key." How sinister are them type of things? And again, I know those things still happen today if you go on holiday at different countries. My friend went to America on a business meeting and she got her ass felt by three different men from America, like in that meeting, thinking they can do stuff like that. So people these days still doing it. But this film showcases in a way that, like, I know you kind of laugh at it, but it's kind of poking fun at people, at men for being that stupid.
Yeah, and it's, again, when you talk about the progression of this movie, it's Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon recognizing, look at how these get like, we have to do better.
Yeah.
We've got to do better. This film, like Paul mentioned earlier, progression is such a powerful word throughout it because of the, you know, there's a lot of subjects in here that could have been really taken and really turned on its head and to a place where we could be looking at this very differently and analysing it very different. But it is almost, do you know what it reminds me so much of? And it sounds really daft to say, but the Golden Girls?
The Golden Girls
are so ahead of its time when it comes down to the topics that shouldn't be talked about or was too difficult to talk about. It kind of reminds us of that in a way, but it goes to the credit of the cast, of the crew, of the writers, everyone involved in this all is on the same page. When I was reading about Tony Curtis, who I don't know why I always remembered this, but his real name is Bernard Schwartz.
Right, okay.
I don't know why I remember what his real name is, but I do. He actually broke a massive Hollywood taboo well before this movie came out in 1950 by insisting that Sidney Poitier starred with him and was top billing on The Defiant Ones.
Right, okay.
You don't do that in 1950s in Hollywood.
No.
You don't act for a black actor to be top billing and just as have as many rights as what a white actor does. It doesn't happen. Sort of for Tony Curtis to do that kind of explains his role in this film.
Yeah. No, I don't think many other people would have pulled. Well, I don't think anyone could have really pulled off what they did to the level. Mm. And that's probably why when we talk about films being remade or redone, I don't think this film ever would be in the category of being a remake. Now, I've got a question for you as well, because I know they did do this with a few the black white movies. There is a color version of this movie. Have you watched it?
Yes.
What did you think?
I didn't like it.
No.
I was really taken out of it, and it's probably because of how much I know this one, how much I know the black and white one. It's so strange, because recently, I mean, again, if you know me, you know this. I'm a huge, I don't want to say a fan, that is such the wrong word, but I have such an interest for the JFK assassination. It's ridiculous. If I've watched one documentary, I've watched 1,000. And I watched a new one the other day where it actually showed you it in colour. The whole event of, you know, of Dallas, Texas, in colour. And it totally changed my perspective on the whole day. It made it real. As when I've watched other documentaries before, you can kind of distance yourself from it. This really, like, kind of changed the perspective. And I was like, shit.
It changes,
and that's almost the same when you watch this.
It kind of changes the tone. I don't know why it does.
Does it make it as funny?
It shouldn't make as much sense. But in the black and white, there's some... It hits harder. There's more impact. I don't know why it's more punchy. I don't know if maybe the colour's a bit more distracting. Like, you're looking away from things that you're not meant to be looking at because of the colour. But because it's black and white, you're focusing on what's in front of you, the actors and, like, their performances and stuff.
Yeah.
And you're just totally engrossed, and, like, you go along with the ride for the movie so much more than I thought. Because I don't know why, you just get taken out of it.
No, you do, massively, because, and again, it's because your perspective is completely changed, which is how I felt the same of this documentary, that I've seen that footage 100 million times. And it still, it had a completely different effect on us when I watched it in colour, just like what this does. The funny is taken out for some reason, and it probably is your concentration levels are heightened because of all this colour around you, of stuff you've not seen, because you know this movie to be in black and white. I did watch on the making of, it showed you how it would have looked in 1950. You know, because I'm watching it on BBC iPlayer. It's very clear. Yeah. Like, it's incredibly clear. It looks like Marilyn's going to walk out my screen at one point. It's so grainy, and it's so weird to see it so disjointed. And yeah, but that's how film, that's the beauty of technology today. We get things cleaned up.
And tidied up, but yeah. Seeing this in, like, a shiny HD as well, like, again, there's aspects, it's just beautiful. But not just, like, the humour aspect and, like, say, the everything that goes on. The story as well is so much fun. Like, when they go to the hotel and they're having, and, like, in turns, because, like, basically Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis are running away from the mob, and they think they get the furthest away as possible. But just so happens that the hotel that they're performing at, there's a big mob meeting where they're having a discussion regarding the future of who's going to be running the mob.
Yeah.
And again, in the most stereotypical way, because Spatz has basically killed Toothpick Charlie because he was an informant, but also with him being who he was a friend to the big mob boss. So there was going to be repercussions. And they use a guy coming out of a birthday cake with a Tommy gun, and it's just so, it's like the whole thing, it's like, oh, we've decided to throw you a birthday party, and Spatz is like, it's not my birthday for 4 months, and he's like, yeah we just thought we'd do it early, we'll just celebrate it. It's like, why wouldn't you get the fuck out of the room?
I know. And the funniest part of the whole thing, you don't get to see the shooting because your view goes straight underneath the table where Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon are hiding. Which, by the way, if you didn't notice, fuck Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon did that whole scene in heels. Yep. He's running around all over the place in heels, and Tony Curtis has got flats on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go into the table with them two, and you come back out at the end when everyone's been shot and they're all lying there dying, and Spatz is like, oh, I knew this was happening, I knew this was going to happen. And then he just goes, and then three lights go off behind him, and there's no shot in him.
No.
It's so funny.
But
it's probably unintentional, but it was hilarious.
But, like, see, that's why you didn't need, like, Like even when they're at the start, when they were having gunshots at the cars, you could hear the noises and sting, but you were never seeing the bullets fly.
So funny.
But again, that's just like say the effects that you have, and they're doing what they can. It's like they don't need to say that. They don't need to prove someone's getting the hedge blown up to die. It's just like say you can take yourself, like say in that type of like moment and kind of enjoy it. I have to say, I know we've talked a bit like say about like the tones of this movie. This is probably one of the most wholesome movies you can watch, from start to finish. Like there's you laugh along, you enjoy. This is a movie you can watch with your parents, your grandparents, your nieces, nephews, your sons, your daughters. This is one of those movies that is just for everyone. And it's very, very rare that a movie's like that. Because people can say, oh, I'm not going to watch that. It's not for me. Literally, this movie has everything, anything for everyone. Like, if you watch it, you will get something from this movie. Doesn't matter what your humor is, what kind of like how you like your story. It's just like one of the like universal great movies.
Yeah, it's unintentional. It almost comes across sometimes unintentionally funny, even though the jokes are all written in there because they're just done so effortlessly. When I said to my mum and dad earlier today that we're doing this episode and that we're going to be looking at more classic Hollywood movies, my mum was like, oh, we're watching it this afternoon. I was like, oh, okay.
Hi, sorry, mom. I hope you like your white.
There's one thing I want to mention before I put my laptop down because it's starting to do me head in. I mentioned earlier about Marilyn Monroe and the whole difficulty of her. There was one person who kind of had her back. And I think this just echoes everything we've been saying about him throughout the whole of this episode. It was Jack Lemmon. He was the only one who kind of forgave everything she did. And there was some, I've just been reading out some of your notes. He believed Marilyn simply couldn't go on in front of the camera until she was absolutely ready.
Yeah.
Didn't matter if everyone else wasn't, she had to be ready. And he said she knew she was limited and God damned well knew what was right for Marilyn. He said she wasn't about to do anything else. He also said that although she may not have been the greatest actress or singer or comedian, she used more of her talent, brought more of her gifts to the screen than anyone he ever knew.
Yeah, that's just lovely.
And Jack Lemmon died in 2001, did I say it earlier?
It was around about that time, like I say.
Yeah, 2001, he was 76 years old and he died of cancer, something that he'd been suffering from for a couple of years. And at his funeral, there was a certain actor who said one of the most beautiful things about him was that he was a genuinely beautiful human being. He was the person who was part of Hollywood, but didn't allow Hollywood to take part of him. And I thought that was such a testament to him. Like, I've probably, in this one episode, this one movie alone, have probably become a very huge Jack Lemmon fan.
No, that's great. And that's what you get from doing things or looking into films like this as well. Because, again, when we do like the Nerdy Up North reviews or pick a film or pick something that we do, we normally do pick something that we love, but we try and think of like either or it'll be something that the community will get from it or something that might be weird enough that people think, oh, we'll check that out. Yeah. This movie, again, is a little bit of a selfish one for me or you. I'm not going to lie about that. But if anyone else is listening or watching along and never seen this movie, please, please go and check this out. You will be surprised at how good this movie. And if you don't like it, fair enough. I can understand. It's like say it's black and white. People don't like black and white movies. Try and look past that. Try and get past like the thing that it's old. Just enjoy it because you'll not watch a better movie than this today.
The oldies are the best, and they're the best for the reason. The reason Hollywood is emulating it now is because it can't do better than what it did, and this is one of their movies. You can't have another Some Like It Hot.
No,
it wouldn't happen. Classic Hollywood is amazing for a reason. I never look at a movie and go, oh, it's black and white. I can't watch that. No. The only movies I ever stow that with is anything that's subtitled. I can't, and that's for obvious reasons. One, I can't see them, and two, I can't read.
But there's reasons why people keep going back and watching these type of movies.
Yeah.
There's people keep going back and trying to find out or read about Marilyn Monroe. When you see her in this movie, again, forget about everything that went on behind the scenes. Forget about anything like about you've heard about her. She is magnetic. Literally, you cannot take your eyes off the screen. You cannot like say literally it's breathtaking, and she is something that we will never have again.
No, we never will. And even though everything that I've said about her, and again, you have to remember it comes from love. With her, it is beyond fandom with me. But think of everything that I have just said to you about Marilyn Monroe, and then watch the film and think, how the fuck did all of that take place when she is good as what she is? Like, that's Marilyn. Like, Marilyn was good at being Marilyn Monroe. Like, that was her job. That was her acting job. Behave.
Try watching this movie and not fall in love with
Oh, absolutely.
her.
It's, I want to say it's the movie I did fall in love with her in, but it's not. There's No Business Like Show Business, which is one of my favorite. She's not even in it that long, but that's how much of an impact. Like, Ethel Merman's in that film, for God's sake, and I still can't not think of Marilyn in it. But yeah, this is a top bill, and she is top bill Marilyn Monroe film.
Yes.
Can't take that away from her.
I think that's a nice place to like kind of end that on that little
Yeah.
point. I don't want to add any more to it. The only
No.
thing I would probably say is go and watch the movie, check it out, experience what we've just described.
Experience the humor that Billy Wilder can bring to the screen from the 1950s and still have you sitting in 2025 laughing your tits off.
Certainly.
Because that's what it did. It's on, for anyone in the UK, it's on BBC iPlayer. If anyone wants to go and watch it, along with 7 Year Itch and How to Marry a Billionaire or Millionaire, never remember which one it is.
Yes. So next week is going to be an emotional one.
Next week, I can imagine there's going to be tears, a lot of tears, possibly coming more from Paul than me. Maybe a bit of both, actually. Probably a bit of both.
So
I'd
next
imagine it's going
week,
to be a bit of both.
yeah, so next week is about hope.
Wow.
Next week is about believing a man can fly.
He did though.
He did. He flew higher than anyone and else has ever done in this world.
I haven't even watched a documentary yet, and I feel myself, I'm gonna cry. Like, I haven't even watched, like, I've waiting, because a part of my new schedule, I have to wait until when I can, pop my schedule allows me to watch this. But I'm prepared, knowing more now than what I've ever done about Christopher Reeves. I'm prepared for this to be an emotional episode.
It's been a long time coming, like talking about these movies, because I think
I'm
they've been
surprised.
bridging, but I think it's always been waiting for the right moment.
Yeah, I agree. It's not
Because
something we wanted to chuck out dilly-dally, like, oh, we'll fill the gap with that.
no, because this wasn't a gap filler. This is, as I said, this is the reason why I love superhero movies. This is the reason why we get superhero films. Because if we didn't get Superman back then, we wouldn't get the films like X-Men, we wouldn't have Spider-Man, certainly wouldn't have Batman. This is the trendsetter. This is
Yeah.
the biggest success story from like say a comic book to screen that was ever made. How to make Superman relatable, how to make you care about Superman as a character. And we'll get into that all and a little more. So we're not just doing one movie. We're going to do, like I say, we'll call it the Christopher Reeve Experience. We're doing Superman 1 and Superman 2, and we're going to get into the documentary that came out last year as well,
Yeah.
just because of how impactful and life-changing it can be to watch that. And again, I'm not overselling it. It is, like I say,
Yeah.
one of the highlights of last year.
I think it would do an in it would be an injustice not to do. If we were just doing Superman 1, I could understand, but the fact that we're doing Superman 1 and 2, it would be a disservice to us, the listeners, to him, to not talk about him as a person. He made this character. Like, Superman is not an original character of his. It's been done well before he came out, but he broke the mold with it. He set the bar massively, and I think we're gonna do our very best to cover everything, to the respect that it deserves.
Yeah, so we'll give it like its due. Then the week after that, we are being followed up by an 80s action with The Running Man. So we have Lee.
Oh, yes.
I'm terrified to know what he'll get dressed up as
Oh, this
for
is going to
that.
be so good. So good. And
Yes.
after that is the start of our Star Wars talks.
Yeah, so we're just going to bridge that one with just a general talk about Star Wars, what how
And
we got into it, what we love
yeah.
about it,
And
and we'll
see where we are. See where
yeah.
we are with Star Wars right now. Like, where does the ground lie in the Star Wars fandom in your world? Because mine's very different.
Because we've had a few nice, interesting conversations about certain films, but like I say, having a general talk about the wars, like I say, I think it's a long time coming. And we've got Jake and Joe, the two J's, double J, coming on to talk
Double
about
J
that
in it.
one. Double J in it. Yeah, so that's going to be an experience. So what's happening next? It's not next. No, next week's not returning. No, it's the week after. Are we still
The week
not?
after.
Are we still not talking about that yet?
Still not talking about it. Actually, you'll find out. I've been dropping some videos of the return. There's a new one just being dropped on TikTok right now. It's still not telling you what it is, but we will be back on the 13th of January. Monsters Up North returns, and I,
Yes.
for one, cannot wait. I am going fucking crazy. I've got lists upon lists of, because this year in horror is going to be insane. It's either going to work really well or really bad.
It's going to be an interesting time.
So it's going to be interesting.
So I think we've done a like I say we've had a bit of a slow day today, so we've done an extra video for yous tomorrow.
Had a bit of a slow day. I've worked my arse
I was
off.
busy, but what we've done, we've got the lovely lads from Top Grumps to join us, and
Oh, so much fun.
we watched a few old trailers, movie trailers. So it's only probably, I think the video is just under an hour. So I was expecting it to be a lot shorter, but we just got into it and started enjoying it too much. So you'll get our reaction to watching some very old movie trailers,
It's a gem.
some interesting ones. That's going out tomorrow at 1 o'clock. I'm going to try and do a few more then and get more people involved because I think that was quite fun.
It was.
Also, Top Grumps is going out on Tuesday. They're doing Jack Burton this week, so
Oh,
that'll be an interesting one. So
serious.
the lads were kind enough to take my request after having me on there. They're not a bad bunch. Like I said, it is an interesting show. It's funny in its own way.
Yeah, all jokes aside, them lads are hard workers. They
Yes.
really are.
So again, we've got more stuff coming in the new year, and everything is getting run by the new boss lady, which is Sammy. So the boss bitch is in town tonight.
That'll be me. Audio for this episode and any other episodes, I think this is just the one going out. Yeah, it will be out on Tuesday. That's an easy job for me. But that goes for any time that any podcast goes out, it goes out on a Tuesday, and you have to look for the individual name of the podcast you're looking for. So, for example, if you want Nerdy Up North, type in Nerdy Up North, Trekking Up North, Monsters Up North, Women of Nerd Culture, Gigs Up North. You have to look for them individually on the anywhere you get your podcast from. If you are on YouTube, please remember to like, share, and subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you never miss an
Yes,
episode.
and I believe the Women of Nerd Culture is coming out next Saturday. I think they're doing their episode on books.
Interesting.
So
And the countdown to Marvel, countdown to Doomsday continues in 2 weeks' time with
the
the
Avengers.
Avengers.
No, I'm busy. I'm recording an episode for, was it Let's Talk About Horror next week as well. So
Shut up. You
I
better
know.
be free on Tuesday.
Which this Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday I am, yeah.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
It's
See,
fine.
you can tell the boss is in town now.
Yeah, so next the next Countdown to Doomsday is the Avengers, but the one that's just taken place on Saturday, That was Captain America, the First Avenger. Please go and check it out. Come and join us for the countdown. Come and join us and take part in the conversation of the watch along that we're having leading up to Marvel's Doomsday.
And check out the Discord as well. We are going to do a few
Yes.
watch alongs in there. We did one the other night where we watched Physical 100, which was quite entertaining. I did start off watching the Goonies, but everyone got bored, so I
You
switched
gotta know
over.
your audience.
Yeah, but I tell you what, Molly and Bex got very into Physical 100.
I bet.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, yes. Thank you everyone who's been watching along. Thank you for everyone who's
Yes,
subscribed. Thank you for everyone for the last 3 years. Here's to another year of nerdiness. So
some of
yes.
that.
So same bat time, same bat channel.
Stay nerdy, everyone. Bye.
Bye.